The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Our guest this week is David Sein, who is going to specify for us things you need to know about Medicare, especially recent changes. You know, from time to time, we cover a number of studies here on the program about retirement, with 10,000, this is amazing, 10,000 baby boomers retiring each day and well into the next decade. This is going to be the trend. The issue of retirement is going to be a major economic and financial issue facing this nation, from workforce dynamics to the cost of funding entitlements, from Social Security to Medicare. Although so far, I might point out, in the Republican presidential debates, we've heard precious little about that, even though this is going to be one of the major trends that is going to be confronting us and may actually derail some of the things that we're actually debating right now. Now, as more studies come out addressing these issues, there are some very startling and scary facts about boomers facing retirement. The latest study sums it up rather cogently. The plain fact, to sum it up in two words, not ready.
Well, you know, our politicians in the industry, John, have always told people that, hey, they have little to worry about, nothing to fear. But on the retirement front, you know, people are feeling a little bit different. So, you know, a lot of the advice that's given out, don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. There's nothing to worry about, whether it's Social Security or Medicare. And we're going to get into that today, because Medicare, for some individuals, may see their premiums go up 52% because Medicare needs 25% more income to stay solvent. So boomers are worried today for good reasons. Job insecurity, frozen salaries or little increases in pay. And you take a look at rising basic expenses are not reflected in the CPI, not to mention things like unpredictable markets. So there are a lot of reasons why people feel uneasy today, John, just to mention a few.
Let's delve into the new report that is out from the National Association of Government-Defined Contribution Administrators. Let me read the opening sentence from the report that sums it up. Quote, the unfortunate state of America's financial preparedness for retirement is well documented and may be summed in two words, not ready. So there you have it. Basically unprepared, the report mentions they are super worried about the looming disaster of healthcare costs for retirees, something they say nobody is ready for, worse than most people don't even seem to realize will become a major problem. And you know, Jim, that's actually surprising given the fact that, if you recall, it was over a decade ago when President George Bush said in the Congress during a State of the Union message that they had to act on Social Security or it was going to go bankrupt. And of course, he was roundly booed by the Congress at that time. But we're going to be at that point. And now we're talking about it, but the people in general and politicians aren't talking about it. So let's get into some of these really relative statistics.
Yeah, because some of the facts, as we'll talk about, as I interview David Sein from Medicare about this 52% increase that's probably going to affect maybe 30% of Americans filing for Medicare. We'll get into that later on in the show. But this study, which came out from the administrators of defined contribution plans, it's one more study, and we've talked about a string of these on the program. The first stat is only 22% of today's workers are confident they will have enough money in retirement. Now, whether that stems from, let's say, job insecurity, that we've seen two recessions in the last decade, a lack of savings, poor returns from investments, rising expenses, what is clear is there is a new financial angst in this country, a feeling that things aren't right. And it, I guess, goes along with, John, what we call the new normal. In a world of 0% interest rates, the Fed met last week. They did not raise interest rates, and it's very clear it's going to be a long, long time before rates really rise of any significance. And what you have right now is basically monetary policy is basically steering the economy. You add that to the instability we see overseas, people just, you know, you just get this feeling they don't have a lot of confidence about the future. And it's something that is changing now because there was this view for the longest time that the government could fix everything. And I think we're reaching that point where confidence in government is peaking. This was a point I covered in an interview I did with Martin Armstrong during our summer recess. And I think you're starting to see that right now. For example, the popularity of somebody like a Donald Trump.
And you know, the second stat from that report actually amplifies the first fact on low confidence to be able to retire, which is the fact that 45% of Americans have saved absolutely nothing for retirement. Now think about that for just a minute, what that's going to mean. It has serious implications for at least half of all Americans because they have nothing, zip, zero, nada in savings. Now, to be honest, Jim, it's not necessarily their fault because if you recall, the baby boom generation has been chasing this inflation game all during their working careers as well. And it's become harder and harder. So they've had to run faster and faster. And many are just living hand to mouth from month to month. So no wonder confidence is low, which means a greater dependency on Medicare and Social Security at a time when both programs are in danger of going broke. This is a really rough, both financial and political trend. We'll be talking with Medicare Administrator today, and the 52% increase in Medicare premiums do go into effect this January unless there is some kind of congressional fix.
You kind of wonder if there will be a congressional fix, because imagine you're in that 30% group that's subject to a 52% increase in your Medicare premiums, John. What do you think you're going to be thinking when you walk into that voting booth come next November? So unless they change it, that is a fact. And we'll be talking with an official from Medicare later on in the broadcast. But unfortunate thing about these statistics is they are averages. I mean, you talk about middle class, high net worth Americans have retirement accounts. You talk about the low end of the spectrum, the unemployed, the underemployed. John, just as that statistic, have nothing or very little saved. And according to the report, here's one that really surprised me. I didn't think it was this bad. The median retirement account balance in this country is $3,000 for a working age household and only $12,000 for households approaching retirement. Now, here's another stat. Two-thirds of working households between the ages of 55 and 64 have at least one earner has saved less than 1 year's income for retirement. This is leading to one of the big issues for this country going forward, John, in the balance of this decade. And as you're right, it wasn't even covered in the debate. President Bush tried to cover this in 2004. People are saying, don't worry about it. This thing's okay for the next gazillion years. And here we are talking about Medicare as a result of Obamacare needs to increase revenues by 25% to stay solvent. So Social Security and Medicare are on the verge of going broke without a fix. At a time, we're seeing more and more Americans are becoming dependent on these programs for sustenance.
You know, this point was brought up in the third statistic of the report that the financial challenges that face upcoming retirees are worse than they've really ever been since the Great Depression here in this country. The combination of zero returns on savings, rising medical costs, increased longevity, all add up to the perfect financial retirement system storm, to borrow one of your past financial series titles.
Well, that is the next stat. When these report, most of these are related, and the bulk of them are going to be related to medical expenses, because the next stat talks about a growing longevity. They mentioned that an average couple, age 65, can expect to spend 20 years in retirement. So for women, that number actually gets longer, not to mention the probability today, which is increasing, that you could live into your 90s. And they're even talking about centurions right now. So they mention in the study that women tend to be less risk takers than men, which works against them when they talk about investments. Women tend to be more conservative investors. They live longer, so they're more apt to have dollars in cash and bonds and low return assets. And as we've talked about in these programs before, interest rates are the lowest they've been in 5,000 years of human history.
The next stat that relates to that issue, which is that one out of six employers offers health coverage to retirees because of the rising cost of healthcare after Obamacare. And that trend is likely to continue as we see those healthcare costs rise. This is very important since the costs of healthcare in retirement make up the bulk of our list here. And we go back to our parents' day, retirees got set pensions and healthcare costs when they retired. Those days are gone. And by the way, there are some cases I know in the case of my own father-in-law, he had a pension and he had a healthcare plan. And then all of a sudden, the board of the company he worked for decided to ditch the plan. And he had increased costs that he just didn't expect to have. And he was already into retirement. So defined benefit pension plans went the way of the dodo bird. Covered healthcare is becoming equally like that, which means that the vast majority of Americans, it means Medicare. And that's a topic we'll cover today with David Sion for Medicare.
You know, if you've done proper planning, you could have Medicare and long-term care insurance, which removes most of these major risks of healthcare. You could file for Medicare, take out a supplemental program. And if you get the long-term care policies early enough, the cost of long-term care can be brought down substantially. Obviously, you know, it's like life insurance. You take out life insurance when you're younger, the costs are cheaper. It's the same thing with, let's say, long-term care. So this could remove a lot of the major risk of this study of healthcare expenses during your retirement, which brings up the related cost of healthcare. Now, we've talked about this depending on which study you're looking at, but according to this study, they say a couple average age 65 will spend $220,000 out-of-pocket expenses for healthcare during their retirement. That is about, John, when you're looking at this, that's about an additional $11,000 a year that need to be included in someone's budget because sooner or later, those expenses are going to show up. And those numbers, by the way, don't include the fact that you could get hit with something like a catastrophic illness, an injury, or worse, one or both of you end up in a long-term care facility in your final years. And this brings up the next two stats of the program. The average annual rate for healthcare expenses is 5.8% per year, projected from now to the year 2022. This is coming from all the studies that are done on healthcare cost, Obamacare, etc. Now, assume, and we've talked about this, that you wanted to go through a 4% drawdown rate of your assets in retirement with healthcare costs rising 6%. You don't need to be a math genius to figure out where this is going to leave you. The other two stats in the study relate to Medicare, which is that when you file a Medicare claim, they're only going to pay 62% of your healthcare expenses. And once you're on the program, you're on the hook for the other 38%. And one of the things that they talked about here was when the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 was passed, Congress decided that it was going to beat back whatever it could of the program's budget deficit projections by mandating various cost containment measures. That's kind of like a sign word for basically restricting coverage. For the most part, the savings do not accrue to you. They accrue to the federal government. I know you're thinking that can't be right. It is right. The government has the freedom to bring in more money via higher taxes and other means, but to you, you can't raise your retirement income short of going back to work, so you have less money to spend on other things like food and that roof over your head. And that means 38% of your claims you're going to pay for out of pocket. So if you do get into the Medicare program, which we'll be talking about with my guest later on in the program, you better make sure you have a good supplemental coverage. And you better think about some of these catastrophic costs that can arise in the later years of your retirement. I mean, there's so many things that can happen. Now, you're thinking of these 38% costs. What is it? Well, the study kind of broke that out. And they said 23% of your out-of-pocket costs will come in the form of prescription drug expenses. 32% will come for Medicare premiums for Part B and D, and the whopper 45% for Medicare copays, cost of sharing, and deductibles. And you can see how those numbers add up very quickly.
You know, as bad as those expenses sound, Jim, I'd almost say instead of bad, we say spooky. You know, $220,000 is a lot of money out of pocket, but that does not include long-term care. If you don't have long-term insurance, you can add another $200,000 to the $220,000 figure for, tell you what, total sum of around $420,000. Now you can see why the opening line of this report, not ready, is so applicable. And these stats don't paint a very promising picture for retirement for most Americans. One reason you need to have a plan for your retirement is so that you can be reassured you have a roadmap and that you don't get taken by surprise by unexpected events or find yourself downsizing and scrimping the final years of your life.
And when we talk about these surprises, you're going to hear about one of these surprises that's going to go into effect January 1st, a 52% cost increase in Medicare premiums for about 30% of individuals that will be filing Medicare and not taking Social Security. So, you know, you see these stories and stats, and John, we're seeing these more frequently, more studies done. And, you know, I told recently on this program about a client I have whose mother had a stroke, and as a result of that stroke is in a long-term care facility. And now the family is faced with $6,000 a month, $72,000 a year of additional expenses in addition to her household expenses that they're still trying to resolve. And here you have the family pitching in to take care of these costs because mom just simply did not have the income to take care of this. So this is an issue that's going to become more important as the government moves increasingly to cut medical coverage and what government is on the hook for. And that's a major aspect of Obamacare. It's a series of cost containment measures with the savings accruing to the government. So your taxes may be going up, but your coverage will be going down, which is why every retirement plan should include provisions for medical care and make sure you cover your medical expenses, which will consume a major portion of the final third of your retirement years. And as one reason, John, we like to stress test our retirement plans to make sure medical expenses are included in the expenses, because most people aren't thinking, you're not thinking when you retire $220,000 of out-of-pocket medical expenses the day you retire or long-term care expenses. They say the average is $200,000, but the average stay in these facilities is 3-4 years. You know, you take $72,000 a year, multiply that times four, you're talking about a substantial sum of money, $280,000, probably closer to $300,000. So you need to budget in your retirement plan anywhere from an additional $11,000 to $20,000 per year if you want to cover long-term care as well, if not at least some kind of provision for assets that can take care of those expenses as you age.
Well, it's that time of the program where we move on to our weekly case study. All of our case studies are real life studies. They're actual events and people. We just changed the names to protect their privacy. So who is on deck this week?
This week on deck is Joe and Kathy Thompson. Joe and Kathy plan to retire 2 years from now. Joe will be age 66 at the time he retires, so he'll be eligible for full retirement benefits. Kathy will be age 62 and eligible for her teacher's pension. Now, they were in really pretty good shape. One of their things that they did is during the housing boom, they sold the big house because the kids had moved out. They downsized and paid cash for their house, so they no longer had a mortgage payment to consider, which is a really nice position to be in. And so their basic expenses were roughly about $75,000 a year. That's golf, eating out. Then we factored in a probably additional $20,000 of travel because that's something they would like to do now that they would have the time to do it. So total expenses for this couple would be $95,000 a year. Both of them were putting money in retirement plans. Joe was contributing to his company's 401k plan with matching contributions. Kathy was putting into her 403b plan, no matching contributions. So it was estimated in 2 years from now, Joe would have close to $800,000 in his 401k program. Kathy would have $400,000 in her 403b plan, which would be about $1.2 million. Now you think about it, you know, with pensions, Social Security, $1.2 million paid for a home, they would be in pretty good shape, which they were. Other assets that they had, As I mentioned, their home was worth roughly about $600,000. They had no mortgage, free and clear. They had close to $70,000 in the bank, mainly in certificates of deposit, earning very little. So that was really more for emergency. And they were a couple that liked to pay cash for things. And so that was any extra money they put into the CD program. They'd use that to pay cash for their cars. Both their cars were free and clear. This was a couple that wanted to be debt-free throughout their entire retirement years.
Okay, so those were the retired assets to which they were contributing. Now, what about pensions?
Joe did not have anything other than what he had in his 401k program, but his Social Security benefits would be $26,000 a year. Kathy, being a teacher, was eligible for 66% of her salary. Her salary was roughly about $85,000 a year. So it was estimated that her pension from the state would be roughly $56,000. So between Joe's Social Security and Kathy's teacher's pension of $56,000, we were talking about $82,000 a year of total fixed pension versus their basic budget expense of $75,000 a year. So basically, Kathy's pension and Social Security covered their basic budget and part of their travel expenses. But if you factored in travel, there was $95,000 against $82,000. But we also had the retirement assets to rely on. The great thing about this is their fixed expenses were $75,000. That's what it cost them to live, do just about everything they wanted to do, with the exception of travel. And those fixed expenses were covered by a pension, which is the best situation you want to find yourself in. Social Security and her teacher's pension basically covered their living expenses. So they didn't have the stress of what was going on in the markets, what Janet Yellen was going to do with interest rates. They were basically covered through pension programs. The shortfall they had was really coming on the bucket list, which was travel, which could be easily made up with their IRA. But here's the real issue. The real issue is both of them came from families that lived a long time. One of her parents lived in the 90s. And so here's an issue that many Americans are going to face. We talked about the average lifespan of 20 years in retirement. For many Americans, that's actually becoming much longer. It's becoming 30 years. So many of you listening to this program could live into your 90s. In fact, I was talking to a client the other day whose mother is 95 years old, getting around, hobbies, healthy, doing all kinds of things. And so we are living longer, which means the longer we live, the more probability we're going to have for those medical expenses. So their main concern is they wanted to make sure their medical expenses were covered, since longevity ran on both sides of the family. It really wasn't an issue on a medical, because between Medicare, supplemental medical, that was going to be covered, and plus some of the medical that the state covered. So the IRA rollovers would produce, we were factoring in roughly about a 3% return in terms of income. That would produce roughly about $36,000 a year, or roughly $3,000 a month. That would bring their total income to about $118,000 a year versus a total need, including travel, of $95,000, leaving a surplus of $23,000 a year. So the real risk was not out-of-pocket medical expenses, because they had enough in assets that they could draw on to take care of those expenses as they rose over the years. The problem was long-term care, since Joe and Kathy had both had parents that ended up in long-term care facilities. And depending on where you are in California, they can run $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month, depending on where you live. The client that I discussed, whose mother recently had a stroke and is now in a facility, that's $6,000 a month, $72,000 a year. I mean, so you throw an extra $6,000 a month into a monthly budget, and all of a sudden, that can wreak havoc with most retirement plans. They didn't want to take any risk regarding that. So they wanted to take the route of getting a long-term care facility. Now, basically, with Kathy being age 60 and Joe being age 64, we looked into a long-term care policy for both of them. And what we were trying to tell them is, look, you don't want to try to cover every dollar of expenses. If you can self-insure part of it, what you really want is a supplemental program that will kick in to defray some of those costs. And the greatest risk for couples that are listening to this program is when both of you are living. Because when both of you are living, what will happen is maybe one spouse gets sick, has to go into long-term care facility. So now you have long-term care facility expenses added to your monthly budget. Meanwhile, the well spouse living in the home has his or her expenses. So now you're really running two separate household expenses, the long-term care facility expense and then the regular well spouse monthly expenses. And so what we did is we shopped for a supplemental policy that would pay $3,500 a month for 4 years with a 3% cost of living increase each year at an annual cost of $4,260. And that was basically what they wanted. And they had the income to do it. And that was the fortunate thing. So they had surplus income, but what they wanted to do, and they were still at a young enough age where the policy was affordable with the excess income that they had.
So as they're trying to get their eye on what the expenses are going to be during the retirement period, they also had a pretty good handle on the concept of long-term care and what it entailed because they had parents in long-term care. So they understood this.
Yeah. And that was something we find that is left out of a lot of retirement plans is the long-term care expenses and medical expenses. As the study that we discussed in the first part of today's program, you know, John, the 10 facts that came out of here, I would say almost 80% of them had to do with medical expenses. And basically, as a result of Obamacare, you're on the hook now for 38% if you're on Medicare of your expenses. So you're going to have a supplemental program. And as they talked about, out-of-pocket premiums, drug expenses, not to mention long-term care expenses, these are going up at an annual rate of roughly 6% a year. And how many of you living are getting 6% increases in your pensions, 6% increases in your investment portfolio each year? And that's why this, John, is going to be the number one issue in this country going forward. What happens to Social Security and Medicare? You're seeing the first impact of that starting January of next year. If you're filing for Medicare right now and you're not on Social Security, you're going to see a 52% increase in your premiums, which could be substantial. And by the way, that's permanent. And we're going to cover some of the other ramifications here of Medicare and filing for it here in just a moment.
And speaking of Medicare, upcoming next, our special guest is David Sion as Lifetime Income continues at FinancialSense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. To speak to Jim Puflava or his Lifetime Income specialists, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized retirement portfolio.
Well, we've heard about the statistics. Every single day, 10,000 Americans head into retirement, the largest retirement generation in the history of this country, which means more Americans will be applying for Social Security and Medicare. Joining me on the program today is David Sion. He's Medicare's regional administrator from San Francisco. David, welcome back to Financial Sense.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
David, the baby boomers are now starting to hit the Medicare age, and that raises the question of how you sign up for Medicare. And it's not just Medicare, but it's Social Security. But let's deal with Medicare first, because Americans are concerned about health care.
Well, it's easy to sign up. You can do it over the phone. You can do it online with your computer. And for most people, it's a 10-minute or less job.
That easy?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Now, does everyone have to sign up? In other words, take somebody like myself. I'm working today. I'm going to be turning 65 soon. Do I have to sign up for Medicare?
Well, a lot of people get enrolled automatically. If you're already getting Social Security benefits, like you're one of the many people that signed up before they were 65, then you're automatically going to get Medicare the day you turn 65. And if you're under 65, you're disabled, and you get Social Security disability benefits, you too will also automatically be enrolled in Medicare, but not until after 24 months of those benefits, because that's the waiting period that there is for people with disability.
Okay, so let's take those people, let's say that have to sign up. How do they do that? I mean, is there a website? Are there forms? Do you walk into an office? What do they do?
So this group of people, the people that do have to sign up, are people who are not getting Social Security benefits. I almost said checks, but they don't send out checks anymore because these folks are still working usually. So they're going to sign up for Medicare through the Social Security Administration. They handle that because the records are tied together, and they have a couple of ways you can do it. They have an 800 number, 772-1213. They have a website, www.socialsecurity.gov. And in either place, as I said, about 10 minutes, 800-772-1213.
So when you say 10 minutes, I know there's a lot of things that pertain to Medicare. There's Part A, there's Part B, there's different kind of programs, there's Part C, Part D. Are those different aspects of the program explained on the site?
They are. The basic Medicare program, going back to 1965, is Medicare Part A and Part B. Part A being hospital insurance that helps you pay for stays in a hospital, skilled nursing care in a nursing facility, and so forth. And then Medicare Part B, or medical insurance, which helps you to pay for physician bills, things like medical equipment, preventive health services, and things like that. So at the time you sign up, you'll sign up for both A and B.
You know, one thing, and perhaps we can get to this after we cover other aspects of Medicare, is we know that Medicare doesn't pay for everything in Part B and A, and I want to talk about supplemental insurance. But is there, David, a particular time when someone should sign up for Medicare? In other words, is there a due date? Is there a time frame if you don't have coverage and you're supposed to sign up for it? Is there a window period? For example, we know under Obamacare, there are window periods. Does the same apply to Medicare?
Well, I think pretty much the entire world of health insurance has these windows, if you will, just like Microsoft. So, okay, you can sign up for Medicare when you're first eligible, which for most people it's going to be when they turn 65. And the window enshrined in the law is 7 months long. There's the 3 months before the month of your birthday. There's the month of your birthday, and then you got another 3 months after that, after you turn 65. So you got a 7 month period that you can sign up for Medicare.
Okay. So I had heard it was 3 months prior, but you're saying you really have a 7 month window, 3 months before the month of your birthday and 3 months afterwards. And what's the best time during the window to sign up? Does it make a difference?
Well, it does make a difference because you can't begin to actually enjoy the coverage until you've enrolled, and your enrollment is effective the first of the following month. So I suggest to people, you want to get your Part B coverage as soon as you can, as soon as you're eligible, which is the month in which you turn 65. And so the smart person uses those 3 months prior to the month of their birthday to make sure that they're all signed up for Part B. And like so many of these things, you could go in there and find out there's a problem that you didn't know about. So it's good to, you know, have a little time to resolve it in case there's something wrong with your record or whatever. It's good to have a little time.
Let's take a situation that we may see frequently is that a lot of people just aren't aware of these rules. You know, all of a sudden you turn 65, you're not even thinking about it. What happens if you miss this 7 month window period entirely?
Right. And this does happen. And people tell us that there should be a big warning label on the Medicare handbook so that people would know about this. There is a period every year, January 1st to March 31st, that people can sign up regardless of when they became eligible. And that enrollment doesn't effectuate until July 1st of that year. So you're out for a while if you missed that first year. But the thing that really matters is if you enroll late, your premium's going to be higher, and it's going to be higher for the rest of your life, unless you were somebody that had other insurance. So if you're still working and you've got insurance and you don't sign up for Medicare, that's fine. You know, you don't need to sign up as long as you have other insurance. So once you don't, you want to go on Medicare, or else, because your risk is higher as you get older, we're going to charge you a higher premium, and that can really, really sting.
And David, when you say that your premiums could be higher or substantial, is there a quantification of that? I mean, are you going to pay 20% more, 30% more? I mean, how substantial is that penalty?
It goes up as time goes by. So the longer you're out, the higher it is. If you look at our tables, it's a hockey puck. What we spend in Medicare as people get older, if you can imagine. So the later you jump in there, you're jumping in at the higher risk period, and it's rated based on that. I couldn't tell you the exact numbers, but I know that it's substantial if you wait a long time. And here's the other thing. just something to remember. For almost everyone, the way Medicare Part B works is it's 25% your premiums and 75% the government. So you're talking about a program where you get 75 cents for every 25 cents you put in. Why wouldn't you want to join that as soon as you can?
Well, I can tell you just from being an employer with some older employees, I know what I have to pay in terms of, let's say, premium cost for employees, and I know Medicare would be substantially cheaper. And speaking of that cost of Medicare, David, how much do Parts A and B cost the average American?
Well, Medicare Part A doesn't really cost anything other than what you paid in when you were working. So working people pay a 2% of that FICA tax, and that goes to fund Medicare Part B. And so when you retire or sign up for Medicare Part B, you're entitled to that. Medicare Part B has a monthly premium, and for the great majority of people, it's $104.90 a month. But people who earn more than a certain amount of income, and this has been something that's been brought into the law in recent years, will pay a higher premium that is indexed to their income, and that might be some of your listeners.
And how high does that premium go? Is there a limit to it, and can it be substantially more than, let's say, somebody under $85,000?
Absolutely. So the next bracket where you start paying more is people whose income is $85,000 to $107,000 a year. They're going to pay $146.90 a month. So that's a pretty big deal, $50. That's, you know, cable TV. And that highest bracket, that's for people that make more than $214,000, and they're going to pay $335.70 a month. And that's a lot more than $104.90. So something to be aware of as you go into retirement.
Now, here's something, and perhaps you can explain to our listeners, because I was shocked to hear about that. There's been some recent news stories that say some people signing up for Medicare may face an increase in their Part B premiums of up to 52% next year. Is that true?
Well, it's possible. The premium that I quoted to you was the premium last year, and in the Medicare trustees report, which is published every year, they make some predictions about what the spend was and what might happen. But we set that premium in the fall. There's no specific date for that, and we haven't done it yet. So we don't know what the exact number will be. But the secretary will make that decision at some point in October. And she has pointed out that 70% of the people that are enrolled in Part B will see no change in premiums. And that's a good thing. But if there is a rate hike because of higher costs in the program, that falls on people who either are enrolling in the first time or people that have that higher income and are, you know, subject to that additional payment. And also for those few people who pay their Medicare premiums directly rather than through Social Security deduction. In the law, there's a protection for people with Social Security that if your Social Security payment doesn't go up, your Medicare payment won't go up either. So theirs is kept lower, but not everyone gets that protection.
David, it seems to me, let's say an individual is thinking of signing up for Medicare, but they're not ready to sign up for Social Security. They're going to wait one more year to age 66 where they get full retirement benefits without any, let's say, loss of Social Security benefits if you work. It would seem to me that might be some substantial planning possibilities to say, hey, I don't want to see my premiums go up 52%. I'll just wait another year, sign up for Social Security, and then pay a lower Medicare premium.
Because they're taking it out of Social Security, you mean? No, because that inflation protection, A, only happens in years when Social Security benefit doesn't go up. And this is one of those years. And second, because the protection doesn't apply for people who are first signing up. So that when you sign up for the first time, you're going to pay the prevailing premium at that time. The prevailing premium in this year is higher than $104.90. That's the protection premium because Social Security didn't go up next year, rather, if that's what happened.
So let's take a hypothetical example of an individual that's going to turn 65 next year. They want to sign up for Medicare and Social Security. Would they then pay that 52% higher Medicare premium?
Well, let me go back and say again, we don't know what the Medicare premium will be next year. It's not been set. Might not be 52% higher. You wouldn't be paying a 52% higher premium if you weren't in the program before. So we're only talking about certain groups of people to begin with, and it's just a prediction. So I think the right answer to your question is each individual has to look at their needs, whether they have access to health insurance through work, and also their eligibility date for Social Security. In my case, I think it would be like 67 or 68 or something, you know, because of the things that we did in the 80s to shore up Social Security. So everybody's a little bit different. They changed the dates for Social Security, but they didn't change the dates for Medicare at that time, you might recall. So there are a lot of things to consider. And I know from what I read, a lot of people take Social Security early and it's not a good idea for them.
I couldn't agree more. Now, David, I understand that Part B is optional, that you don't have to take it and pay the premiums. Is that correct?
Well, that's certainly the case. If you have other insurance, you don't want to take Part B because you don't have to worry about the premium going up or a penalty for you, rather. But if you don't have insurance and you don't have Medicare Part B and you need services other than the hospitalization, you're going to pay for all of it. So if you go into the hospital and have a procedure without Part B, you're going to pay 100% of the fees for that surgeon, that anesthesiologist, any other doctors that treat you, and you're not even protected by the Medicare limiting charge on those. You're going to pay whatever they want to charge you. And even if you go to a doctor's office for a checkup, you're going to pay the full cost. So with Part B, on the other hand, you would only have to pay the 20% coinsurance payment.
So how does someone decide whether they really need Part B then?
Well, we like to say, look at your current and future health coverage and needs. If you don't have any other health insurance, you reach Medicare age, you want to enroll in Part B when you're first eligible, and that's what the great majority of people do. If you don't sign up when you're first eligible, you run the risk of that late enrollment penalty and, of course, running afoul of the problem of you get sick and you have a lot of money to spend.
So let's take another example. What if you already have health insurance through your current job? So your employer is paying your health coverage. What should an individual do then?
For most people in that situation, it's going to be to their advantage to delay their enrollment in Part B, whether they or a spouse is still working and they have insurance through those benefits from an employer or a union. If that's your situation, you want to make sure by talking to the benefits people at your union or employer and understand how they see the insurance working with Medicare. And if you're in that category, then you can sign up for Part B down the road without any penalty because you had health coverage all along.
And let's take another situation. Let's say, I'm age 65 and I've got two more years that I'm going to be working. Let's say I'm going to wait to age 67 to retire. I currently have coverage. Now, age 67, I retire. I don't have coverage. Does the individual have to prove to Social Security that, hey, I was working and I had coverage to avoid the penalty? What does that individual need to do?
That's right. You have 8 months after your employment ends to sign up for Medicare Part B without a penalty. So this is another one of these windows, because if you wait after that, you will have a problem. And employers now give people a certification annually that says that they have health insurance. You need this now to not pay the tax under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare anyway. And so your employer can certify, or you can prove fairly easily that you had insurance. Yeah.
What should you do, I guess, if your job ends and you suddenly don't have coverage? Let's say you're in this situation. You're, age 66 and you've had coverage with your current employer, but all of a sudden, for economic reasons, who knows, corporate mergers or something, you find yourself without a job and without coverage.
So there again, you have this opportunity to sign up for Medicare if you're otherwise eligible for Medicare and you've got this 8-month window if you stop working. That's probably going to be a better value for you than signing up for a COBRA plan through your employer where you would bear 100% of the cost.
So given all these aspects, there's so many things that people have to consider here. You know, when to take your Social Security benefits. I think people take them too early and deprive themselves of greater benefits later on. We just talked about all these Medicare provisions, Part A, Part B. There's also things like Medicare Advantage, Part D. Do you cover, or is there a booklet on the site that our listeners, if they're in a situation where they're going to have to apply, where these different aspects of the program are explained?
There are. And there are other decisions, as you mentioned before, too, that we can cover in the future around supplemental insurance, around private Medicare plans, around prescription drug plans. And what we do is we publish an annual book called the Medicare Handbook, and we mail it to every Medicare beneficiary household. We put it in every public library. If you go to our Medicare.gov website, you can print it, you can read it as a PDF, you can have it sent to you. So there's a full explanation of the Medicare benefits and the enrollment procedure there. And we have an 800 number, a 1-800-MEDICARE, where we have lots of representatives in five locations around the country that work 24 hours a day, and they'd be more than happy to explain this. But, you know, your listeners are listening to your show because they're concerned about their finances. They're astute. And so that book can help you understand Medicare, but it can't help you understand your life. And so it's important, too, to talk to the people at your employer if you have benefits there and fit this into the broader, you know, financial plan that you have for your life as you think about retirement. Think about it at any age, for that matter. But health is an important part of your financial picture because as you get older, your health care needs are going to increase. You're going to look at hearing aids. You're going to look at more dental work. There's lots of issues to think about. So the Medicare stuff actually is just the beginning.
Couldn't agree more. And once again, David, could you give out the site and a number that people can get this information?
The site is www.medicare.gov. It's pretty simple. And our 800 number is just 1-800-MEDICARE on the telephone keypad, M-E-D-I-C-A-R-E.
David, well, listen, I want to thank you for coming on the program. Once again, we've been speaking with David Sion. He's Medicare Regional Administrator out of San Francisco. David, thanks for being on the program today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
You know, the most important thing to remember here, Jim, when you're talking about Social Security, Medicare, and this can drive you batty after a while because there are different windows that open up at different times in your retirement where action may be required of you. And so it's important that you understand what these windows are because some of them will affect you for the rest of your period when you're involved with Medicare and with Social Security.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you heard David mention there, depending on when you sign up, and if you don't sign up and are just simply unaware of it, you're going to get penalized. And unfortunately, that penalty is going to last you the rest of your life. Likewise, one of the biggest mistakes that we see, John, in the retirement field is people taking their Social Security benefits early and don't realize they're not maximizing the benefits both for themselves and their spouse. And literally, they could give up the equivalent of almost $80,000 to $100,000 worth of benefits over their lifetime. So once again, it's why we try to stress so often on this program the importance of planning. And you heard it there from the administrator from Medicare. You know what? Medicare and healthcare costs are one aspect of your overall retirement plan. Social Security, living expenses, all those things need to be weighed together and put together logically in a plan so that you don't get penalized for the remainder of your retirement years. And remember, one of the statistics we talked about earlier in the program from this recent study on retirement, more and more people are living longer. Average 20 years between a husband and wife, and for women, that's even longer. One more reason you need to plan today. Well, we've run out of time, so I'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.